I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, now in depth on cyber mob tactics against women. Among women writers and journalists online, Kathy Sierra's story is infuriating and frightening. She endured 10 years of threats and harassment and digital vandalism because she had the temerity to post ideas and opinions. Last fall, she wrote in Wired magazine, "I now believe the most dangerous time for a woman with online visibility is the point at which others are seen to be listening, following, liking, favoriting, retweeting." Sierra added, "From the hater's point of view, you do not deserve that attention. You are stealing an audience." But Sierra's experience is not all that uncommon. I've had a taste of it. I'll bet many of you have too. Indeed, one of our guests believes digital harassment is being overlooked the same way that sexual harassment was in the 1970s. So today, a conversation about what motivates digital harassment toward women. I'm interested in your experience as well. As a woman, have you had to endure online harassment? And maybe that takes a number of different shapes. Has it inhibited the way you work and socialize online? So here's the phone number. Very interested in your experience with this. 800-242-2828. 651-227-6000. You can weigh in at nprnews.org. And you can talk to me about it on Twitter. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Ann Friedman is a writer, editor, podcaster. She joins us today from L.A. Hi, Ann. Good to have you on the show. Hey, Ann, are you there? Okay, we'll try to get Ann. Danielle Citron is a professor at the University of Maryland's Law School and the author of Hate Crimes in Cyberspace. And she's with us today from San Francisco. And Danielle, welcome to you. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, experts on sexual harassment have long said that harassment in the workplace, it was not really about the sex, it was about the power. And as I read some of the accounts of women that have had to endure this, that's what it seems like as well. What's your take on that?
I think that's right. So often the way in which we've seen online harassment develop and its response, that is society's response to it, mirror precisely the ways in which we saw sexual harassment in the workplace happen and develop. And then at least in the late 60s and early 70s, the response was, it's no big deal. It's just a perk of the workplace.
Right.
Get over yourself. This is what's normal. This is what we do, you know, in the workplace. If you don't like it, lump it, leave. And if you didn't dress so attractively, it wouldn't happen to you.
Yeah.
And we very much see, and sort of at the heart of my book, I argue that, you know, the way in which we minimized and trivialized sexual harassment is the same playbook. We say the same thing to individuals who experience online harassment. And the harassment, that is, we should underscore, is often sexually humiliating and sexually threatening. So it's not just any old threats, it's rape threats. And it's not just, you know, lies that sort of run of the mill, but, you know, it's the stigma that someone like Kathy Sierra was accused of being a prostitute, or for others, a sexually transmitted disease. And it's not just any old privacy invasion. It's nude photos of someone, often next to their home address. And so the response, though, is now the same so often.
Right.
And it's, it's the Wild West. It's what do you expect from the internet? You know, everyone experiences it without certainly an understanding that, no, not everyone experiences rape threats, right, with their home addresses. The second sort of very similar response is, stop whining. Boys will be boys. What do you think, right? We blame the victim.
Yeah.
Much in the way that we did in the past. We say, you know, if you didn't share those nude photos, you wouldn't be in this predicament. Or, which is totally amazing, we think about Kathy Sierra, the response to her, you know, after the first wave of attack, which was, you know, sort of rape threats, very direct and graphic threats on her blog and in her inbox, as well as sort of photos of her that looked like she was being strangled and screaming, and another where she had like a noose beside her neck. She wrote about it, right? She came out on her blog and said, this is just like enough's enough, and I'm terrified. And the response to her instead of was like basically it wound up a sort of second wave of attack. And so she was doxxed. Her social security number was sort of spread all over the web. She was accused of being a prostitute, of having been a victim of domestic violence, and having, this is all false, by the way.
Yeah.
Right. And the reason the people gave for engaging in that kind of activity was, you were whining. We were tired of you whining, Sarah.
That's something I want to bring Ann Friedman. Hi, yeah. Ann. Are you with us now?
I am.
Oh, good, good. That's what I want to bring you in on as well. When you start to talk about it online, what's been going on, it seems like the response is even fiercer.
Yeah, it also depends on which sort of subgroup you might be provoking. One thing about Kathy Sierra's case is that she was, you know, talking specifically about the tech industry. And there are certain issues on which women who are very vocal may be more likely to see a response like this. I think that if there's a strong Reddit thread about it, the likelihood goes up that you may get some sort of violent response.
Well, but why?
Which is not to say that, I mean, I don't know. I don't mean to imply that only women who talk on certain topics get this harassment online, because, mm-hmm. you know, listen, women could write a blog post about their views on vaccines, for example, to reference your last mm-hmm. segment, or mm-hmm. or the new Magic Mike trailer, or something that doesn't appear to be immediately, you know, gender-based, or, you know, trying to provoke men specifically, and still get an onslaught of negative tweets and terrible emails. I can tell you from personal experience, and I've been putting my opinions on the internet with my full name for, you know, a decade, is that when you write about specific issues, specifically when you are calling out sexism in a certain industry or a certain subculture, that greatly increases the likelihood that you're going to get angry tweets or sort of threats, which is not to say, again, it's exclusively that. But I think that there is sort of a sometimes there's this sense of maybe a herd mentality, like you've come for men, and specifically my type of men, and so we're going to come for you. It feels very vindictive when you're on the receiving end.
But Anne, do you think Kathy, this is what really resonated with me from the Wired article, when she says there's this perception among who she calls the haters that you're stealing an audience you don't deserve. What is that about? It sounds like you've experienced some of that.
Certainly. I mean, there's starting to emerge some research on the troll mentality.
Okay,
there was a This American Life episode, I believe it was last week or the week before, featuring a journalist named Lindy West, who works for GQ, and what happened when she confronted a man who was going so far in harassing her that he created a Twitter account with the image and name of her dead father and used that to harass her, which is... I have never experienced harassment on that level. It's, you know, that's pretty extreme. And so she reached out to him and was like, hello, like, are you a human being? Have you ever lost someone? Like, I think that she actually engaged. She broke the don't feed the trolls rule that we're all told over and over.
Yeah.
And when she spoke with him on the air for This American Life. He basically said, I was angry when I heard that you were so confident in your beliefs and proud of who you were and where you were going, and were a woman sort of boldly staking out a position on anything. I was like, who does she think she is? And who do you think you are is the dominant tone of,
right.
I would say, most of the negative responses that I get from men about my work.
Agreed. On Twitter here, listener says, if I'm assertive online, I'm considered a B word and told not to get my panties in a bunch. Assertive men are treated much differently. To the phones here to Constance in Minneapolis. Hi, Constance. What's your experience with this?
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
My experience is that I'm a real estate agent in Minneapolis, and a few years ago, I moved to a new community. I was somewhat recently divorced, and I began networking in that neighborhood and blogging about homes in that neighborhood and various revitalization efforts. And very, very quickly, I began to receive anonymous comments on my blog, or comments with names that were kind of parodies of posts that I had made, basically just trolling, calling me all sorts of names, generally related to me being a female, a slut, and whore, and things that probably can't be repeated on the radio. And it went on for quite some time, and I did set my blog to comment moderation, so ultimately people couldn't see these comments, but I could still see them. And at one point, it just became so disturbing that I shut the blog down because I didn't want to go to no comments, because the whole point of the blog was to engage my community and
yeah.
talk about real estate. So it was really a bummer.
So you had to just shut it down. Yeah, this is interesting. Danielle, I was reading something from, I think it was Katie Keeney wrote on the Cut blog on New York Magazine the other day or recently. She said, every time I got an unwelcome, harassing, mean, rude, bizarre message from a man I didn't know, I have to decide whether to be proud that I can ignore it and say nothing, or to be aggressive and make it known somehow and give it and therefore him attention. These are terrible options. They are terrible options.
Right. And I think what your caller's example demonstrates is that it can be incredibly silencing for people.
Right.
Right. To be on the sort of receiving end of threats and really derogatory comments in ways in which strike at the heart of your sort of professionalism and capability to work, that it drives people offline, and it has a real cost, I mean, economic and social cost for people. And that's true that, when victims sort of talk back, it produces a sort of much more furious response in the way that Anne talked about. And that can be both provocative to the mob and really costly for the victim, and then drives them offline in any event. So I think we can't overlook the real cost of free speech that this sort of harassment really, inflicts on society at large.
Yeah. You know, Anne, I said in the introduction that I've had a little taste of this, and I have to make that decision, too, with the Twitter trolls. You know, do I respond to the idiotic and constant barrage from these people who are just, I guess, desperate for some kind of attention? But if I ignore it, eventually they go away, but it takes a long time. How do you handle it?
My finger moves to the block button very swiftly, very swiftly. And I do, when I open an email and I can sort of tell that's what it is, I archive it. I do actually keep them now. I used to delete them, but I quickly archive it
and I
don't really look at it again. But in terms of action, I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot. I mean, I have long been one of the don't feed the trolls camp.
Mm-hmm.
One of my good friends always says, ignore to destroy, which I love.
That's good.
but it is true that there is sort of this cumulative effect, and I don't want it to be, like the apt example of sexual harassment, something that women are forced to endure on their own and don't really talk about. And therefore, people who don't receive this harassment, like men who aren't sending these harassing tweets, have no idea what's going on. I think it's important that we talk about the issue. And so I try to talk about it a lot in macro ways. I try to, the post that you referenced that Katie Haney wrote, I amplified that because it's a struggle that I have.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been interested in women like Lindy West. And another example would be Mary Beard, who is a well-known classics professor who has had some success in doing some one-on-one confronting of her trolls. And she was profiled in The New Yorker last year. And it was notable how these men were open to a conversation with her.
Idea of that, Anne. I don't care enough about these people to want to confront them about whatever problem, they're having.
I think you have to think of it, and this is, again, I'm still coming around on this issue myself. The way I see it is that the Mary Beard and Lindy West approach is not to coddle these specific men.
Yeah.
It's to find examples that teach us more or like that elevate the conversation. If Lindy West hadn't called her troll, we wouldn't have this American Life episode about the issue. And so I think that maybe you have to think of it as like, all right, I'm going to directly address and slay this one troll for the greater good of womanity writing online.
Yeah.
But again, I haven't joined their ranks. I'm still a block and delete person through and through.
Danielle, I know we want to talk about some laws here, but, a lot of this you can't legislate, right? Mm-hmm. You just can't legislate against it.
I mean, that's certainly right. There are harassment, stalking, and threat laws on the books, but it requires that, of course, we have a persistent or harassing course of conduct that causes emotional distress
yeah.
and or the fear of physical harm. And usually, I mean, the ways in which we can prescribe the speech is when the speech itself that makes up the harassment is something we can regulate. So a true threat, defamation, the publication of a nude photo of a private person, you know, something that we can prescribe that kind of speech or solicitation, like criminal solicitation. But, you know, when it's just someone calling you nasty names, that's completely protected speech, even if they say it again and again.
Right.
And some of the difficulty in confronting, so Carrie, I just want to loop back to your question about, you know, confronting one's harassers.
Yeah.
The real difficulty, though, is our transient anonymity. So it's really hard to confront someone who can just give up their identity. You know, they're not writing under their own names. And then, so you're not really confronting a person who you're naming and shaming.
Right.
Right. So that their reputation is on the line, is not on the line, yours is. And then what they can do is just give up their, you know, pseudonym of, you know, whatever it is, right, Joe Blow, and then assume another one,
yeah,
Jane Doe.
Exactly.
So it's very hard to name and shame and engage in those conversations in the way that Mary Beard did, or then to track down your trolls. It's not certainly impossible, but it also can then risk, so it's very little for them on the line and then risks a backlash. But it's not that law can do nothing. Law can do something. So often the problem is that when, you know, folks go to law enforcement, the response is often twofold. One is that, you know, really police just often don't have the digital forensic expertise to handle it, and so they counsel people to just turn their computers off.
Jeez.
And the second is they just don't know the law.
Mm-hmm.
So that the response is like, oh, it's a civil matter. We don't deal with the internet, which of course they do. And there may in fact be laws on the books that could cover abuse that's posted on third-party sites that's harassing, stalking, and threatening, but the officers just don't know about those laws, and they just don't get training. So that's in part why I'm out here in California working with the Attorney General of California, Kamala Harris, on her task force on cyber exploitation to in part work on the training of law enforcement and rigorous enforcement.
Good. Wow. Steph off the Daily Circuit page.
Yeah, Jeff's wondering, he says, as a person who holds more libertarian and sometimes conservative perspectives and I post on liberal websites, I often get attacked and some of them are of sexual nature at times. Is this simply a consequence of putting yourself out there in general and having opinions on the internet?
Is it man or woman?
He's a man.
Hmm. Anne, do you have a thought on that?
I do. And I think that he's right that, you know, it's a lot easier to attack anyone for any kind of view than it was in the past, largely due to the anonymity question. But I also think we've got some research on this. And, you know, there's one study that says feminine usernames incurred, you know, I think it's something like 100 sexually explicit or threatening messages a day on average, and masculine names received 4 or 5, like, you know, a nominal amount. And I would say that having spoken to, I mean, I'm friends with a lot of writers, both male and female, who produce a lot online. And there's really, it is true that men are harassed as well. But I would say as a volume question, women are more likely to be on the receiving end of it. And I would say that goes double as well for anyone who is a person of color, who, you know, may you know, be gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. I mean, there are a lot of different ways that that the sort of inequalities we see in the real world are replicated when it comes to the harassment you get for being proud and vocal and claiming your beliefs online.
If you're listening in to this conversation, maybe it's resonating with you. We're talking about what I guess I think of as the cyber mob tactics against women online. And I mean, this is, you might have an expertise where you're talking about that and you're expressing your opinions online and you're attracting who we're referring to this hour as trolls, people that are just harassing and constant and intimidating and deliberately insulting. And we're discussing, are there laws against some of this? What's going on with the culture online that allows this and in some ways encourages this? Anne Friedman is our guest. She's a writer, editor, podcaster. She's dealt with some of this. And Danielle Citron is with us, professor at the University of Maryland's Law School and author of Hate Crimes in Cyberspace. So if you've been through this, what do you do? I mean, what's your answer to address this? Has it been silencing in some ways for you? 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828. You can talk to me about it on Twitter as well. It's at Carrie NPR, where a listener says, creating content online is terrifying when you have a family. having my personal details released doesn't just affect me. To the phones to Miranda in Minneapolis. Hi, Miranda.
Hi, good morning.
What's been your experience with this?
I grew up as a single child, so me and my dad used to work on cars a lot. I've lived my whole life loving cars and working on them and doing stuff. And when I join online car forums, of course, it's male dominated, but you know, I would have whole threads of things that I'd done to modify my cars that I was proud of completely deleted, or horrible comments, or, you know, oh, your boyfriend must have done that for you.
It's just because the guys that are into the cars do not think that's a space for women. I mean, Miranda, you think that's what it boils down to?
It is. I've lived in many different states, and that's how it is every time I move. You're either a car wife or you're a man.
Wow. Hey, thanks for the call. Hey, Miranda, I should ask you, what'd you do about it? Did you stop contributing to some of these pages and the blogs?
When I was younger, it was really hard, and I did stop contributing, and I would quit. When I moved to Minnesota, I think that was my hardest one. I kind of backlashed a little bit. I would show up to the car meets and, you know, wait for them to say something, and no one would say anything. But then once I got back online, it was just horrible again.
Yeah. See, Ann, there's the key, the anonymity, right? They don't have the guts to confront. And Miranda wouldn't want that at these places.
Right.
But, boy, the anonymity gives them everything they need.
Right.
To the phones to Maria in Fargo. Hi, Maria.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just going to bring up a concept of bullying, but kind of in a different aspect. I work for a large technology company, and a lot of our communication is done over messaging, even when we're in the same building. And I've noticed quite a bit more comments that are said over that. Obviously, they're not anonymous. Just women to women, a lot of cattiness, a lot of comments, the type of like, oh, maybe you shouldn't be wearing what you're wearing today. But if they see you in the hallway, they'd never say that to you. And I'm 28, and I've had women that are quite a bit older than me say things to me kind of like in a motherly tone, but it's very derogatory, very rude. And it's quite often, actually. So
these are on IM chats where you know who's writing the message. Is that right?
Yep.
Jeez.
That's correct.
Jeez. I don't know. What accounts for that? Either one, Danielle, Anne, you have a thought on that?
So it's the disinhibition effect.
Uh-huh.
You know, when we can't see the reaction of people, we often do and say things that we would never normally do. It's the feeling of anonymity rather than its actual anonymity. So online, we are disinhibited. And it's not often because we don't know who we're attacking. They just feel like images rather than real people who bleed. And it's sort of a well-documented phenomenon.
You know, Danielle, to come back to your comparison of sexual harassment in the workplace, I mean, that began to wane when laws were passed and the culture changed.
That's right.
Is that what we have to wait for? Because that could be years down the line.
No, and I think what we're seeing is that laws increasingly stepping in that, you know, think about revenge porn. It went from something that we just dismissed and said, too bad, so sad. And now, you know, now in 15 states, we have laws that criminalize non-consensual pornography. We saw the FTC going after a revenge porn operator for basically inducing the breach of confidentiality and engaging in extortion. A.G. Harris has prosecuted revenge porn operators and now just got a guilty verdict in the Kevin Bollard case. And so I think we are seeing in very small steps, right, law move in. And I've been writing about this since 2007. And for so long, I felt like I was batting against the sort of dark, and everyone's like, yeah, get over yourself. It's not so bad.
Yeah.
Ask Kathy Sierra, it's auto-admit. Who cares? It's just one or two one-off cases. But I think, as Anne can attest, it's certainly that's not the case. But we are coming to talk about it. So when, you know, I would say 7 years ago, we were like, we'd fall asleep as soon as we would be interested right afterwards. And now we're having a sustained conversation, and we're bringing law to bear. And I think internet intermediaries are coming together to talk about it, at least work that I've been doing with them. So I don't think we're ignoring it anymore. And I'm hoping that this moment is sustained and it endures, much in the way, right, in the 70s, mid-70s and late 70s, that we law moved in and the EEOC stepped in, and then you had Anita Hill testify, right? There was this convergence
That's right.
of interest
right.
that you know, was incredibly forceful. Now, we haven't fixed the problem of sexual harassment in the workplace, but we've come a long way, right, from the experience of the 70s and, of course, before. And so the workplace my daughters are going to enter into is very different from the workplace that my mother, you know, experienced. So, you know, I am hopeful. You can call me a Pollyanna, but I'm hopeful for the future.
I wish you well with the work out
Thank
there
you.
In California, Danielle, too. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And really good to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And a last comment here, Steph, you'll find this interesting, from Elaine in St. Paul. She says, people feel like they can say anything they want on the internet. Her dating profile, Elaine's dating profile says that she loves NPR. She gets a bunch of bad comments on that from men.
Well, she knows those probably aren't the guys she
exactly.
should be dating. They're making it clear.
Take them right off your profile there, Elaine, and don't accept a date with them.